Okay. Ma yididut v'luchatech. This particular zemer is interesting for a few reasons. First of all, we don't know who wrote it. It's anonymous. We don't know where or when it was written either. We know that the author's name is Menachem. We can figure that out because it's written there in the Rashi Tevot. But that's all we know about him. We don't know who he was. We don't know when he lived. It seems that this piyut is primarily found in Ashkenazi communities, but as opposed to the other piyutim that we saw that are more universal, and whose authors anyway were Sfaradim, but this one seems to be primarily concentrated in Ashkenazi communities. But we don't know who wrote it or when. Like the previous piyutim that we saw, this particular zemer also is filled with allusions, with references. But these are primarily not to Tanakh. There are a few Tanakh references in here as well, including, as we'll see, the opening line. But primarily it's not Tanakh. Primarily the allusions here, interestingly enough, are to Gemara and to Halacha. And there's a lot of Halacha. You can learn Halacha by studying this Zemer, which is what we're going to do a little bit today. Interestingly also, we'll see a few parallels to the two Zmirot that we already saw. Things that we mentioned in those Zmirot are going to pop up here also, a few of them, which I don't know what the significance of that is, but just an interesting fact. Okay, so let's start. Ma yididut menuchatech at Shabbat HaMalka b'chein narutz likratech boi chala nesucha levush bigdei chamudot lahadlik ner bivracha Vatechel kol ha'avodot lo tasu melacha. Okay, first of all, the phrase ma yididut menuchatech, as I mentioned a minute ago, that actually is a biblical reference. It seems to be based on Tehillim Pei Dalid, which happens to be the same parak of Tehillim that we did, one of the two parak of Tehillim that we discussed when we saw the period of Tzama Nafshi. The beginning of Tehillim Pei Dalet is the following. Lamnatzeach al agitit livnei korach mizmor, ma yididut, o ma yididot, mishkenotecha, Hashem tzvakot, nechsefa vegam kalta nafshi lechatzot Hashem, libi b'sari yiranenu el kilcha. And that, of course, was the reason we saw it in that context. But here it's Ma Yididot Mishkenotecha, Hashem Tzvakot. How Ma Zeh Yididot? How pleasant? How friendly? So to speak, from the word Yadid, right? How comfortable is your? How do they translate it here? How lovely are thy dwelling places? That's what it says here. Hashem Tzvakot Nichtzefa VeGam Kalta Nafshi LeChatzot Hashem. My heart and my flesh yearn and desire Chatzrot Hashem. So what's the Ma'ididot referring to in that Perek of Tehillim? What's the Mishkan, the Chatzrot Hashem that's being discussed clearly? The Beit HaMikdash, right? Here the anonymous Paitan begins his period with the same phrase, Ma'ididot or Ma'ididut, but here it's not the Mikdash that's being referred to, but rather what's lovely, friendly in Shabbat itself. Right? So he takes an expression that Tehillim uses to refer to the Beit HaMikdash, and he uses it to refer to Shabbat. By the way, there are a lot of parallels between Shabbat and the Beit HaMikdash. Those parallels begin in the Torah itself with the building of the Mishkan. Twice in the description that the Torah gives us of the construction of the Mishkan, twice the Torah sticks in Shabbat, in Parshat Ki Tisa, and again in Parshat Vayakhel. Parshat Vayakhel, it's very bold, right? When the Jews were about to begin to build the Mishkan of course being the predecessor of the Beit HaMikdash itself, in the Midbar, Torah tells us, Vayakhel Moshe et kol adap b'nei Yisrael v'yomer aleihem, eile hadvarim asher tziva Hashem lasot otam. Vayakhel Moshe called all the Jewish people together for a big meeting, and this is what he told them. ששת ימים תעבוד, תעשה מלאכה, ובימה שביעי יהיה לכם קודש, שבת שבתון השם, כל עושה בה מלאכה יומת. לא תברו איש בכל משפותיכם ביום השבת. קודם דגל תשן לא זה שבת, but this was after Matan Torah, they had heard the Yotzer to the Brot, they already knew the laws of Shabbat. Then he continues, ויאמר משה called up in Israel לימור, זה הדבר שתיבה השם לימור, קחו מאיתכם תרומה, and he goes to discuss what's going to be necessary to build a Mishkan. The Gemara asks, why did he do that? Also, earlier in Parshat Kitisa, when the Torah commanded the Mishkan, there's a piece about Shabbat as well. What's the significance of that? The Gemara says that Rashi, I think, makes reference to it there in the Chumash, if I'm not mistaken. And the Gemara says that what the Torah was trying to teach us was that the building of the Mishkan, as important as it is not Doche Shabbat. You can't build a Mishkan on Shabbat. And not only that, but eventually, according to the dominant opinion, except in Halakha, not only is it true that you cannot build the Mishkan on Shabbat, but those activities that were necessary in order to build the Mishkan became the definition. Those are the Lamas and Malacha, right? So you see a connection between Shabbat and Mishkan. Later on also, the Torah in Sefer Vayikra says, Et Shabtotai Tishmoru U'Mikdashi Tirau Ani Hashem. Again, connecting Shabbat and Mikdash. And the Paitan here, it seems, is kind of in a remnant sort of way, doing the same thing, right? He pulls the phrase "Ma'ididot," which the Tehillim used to refer to the Beit Hamikdash. The Tehillim said "Ma'ididot Mishkenotecha," and he said "Ma'ididot or Ma'ididut Menuchatech." Why is Shabbat and Mikdash in any way parallel? If you think about it, they just took it off the SATs, right? Those analogies that you used to have to do? They left them on? They took them off, right? The new ones? They're still there? Took them off, huh? Okay. So it used to be, when you took SATs, you used to have to do, right? You know, A is to B, C is to D, right? One could say, perhaps, that as Mikdash is to Makom, Shabbat is to Zman. Right? That there's space and there's time. Right? And in space, there's a whole world out there, but there are certain places that are more kadosh than others, and Mikdash becomes the focal point of Kiddushat Makom. Shabbat is Kiddushat Zman. Right? So the same way the Beit Mikdash, therefore, is beautiful and comfortable and happy place to be, so too is Shabbat. At Shabbat HaMalkah. Why is Shabbat HaMalkah? That's based on a Gemara. I'm sorry, I asked you to bring Tanakh, so I was going to photocopy the sources from the Gemara that are relevant to the Zemer, I just didn't get a chance. But I'll tell them to you as we go along. Shabbat, Daf Kuf Yud Tef Amud Aleph. It's also a Gemara in Bava Kama as well. There's a list here in the Gemara, here, the various Amoraim. Each one is kind of, I don't want to say bragging, but each one is explaining, you know, good things about himself, things that I do that are worthy. You know, I'm going to get Tzchayim Shemayim because I do this, and I'm going to get Tzchayim Shemayim because I do that. Which is an interesting discussion. You know, why exactly they speak in these terms, but that's the context of the Gemara here. So in the context of that discussion, Rabbi Chanina mi'atef v'kai apanya d'mali shabta. Amar bo v'neitzei likrat Shabbat Malkah. Rabbi Chanina used to go and physically get himself dressed up before Shabbat, and he actually go and try to greet the face of Erev Shabbat. He would actually go out to outdoors to watch the sun setting, and he would say, "Bo'u v'meitzei l'krat Shabbat HaMalkah." And Rabba Barabuna ikra, no, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong thing. Rabbi Yanai lavishmanei b'malei Shabbos v'amar bo'i kala. So he, one called Shabbat HaMalkah, the other called Shabbat HaKalah, and Bezrat Hashem, in a future shiur, we're going to study the piyut of Lecha Dodi, which of course uses both of those expressions, right? Both Kalah and Malkah. And the Lecha Dodi, of course, was written for the Minhag of Kabbalat Shabbat, which began in Tzfat in the time of the Arizal. Lecha Dodi was written by one of his Alivian, that whole minhag of Kabbalat Shabbat was based on this Gemara. So this piyut, which again we don't know when it's from, but this piyut, right, by referring Shabbat to Shabbat as a Malkah, you know, is drawing on that Gemara. And Bechein Narutz Likratech, therefore, is a reference to this idea. Right? There's a halacha that you're supposed to, in some way, greet the Shabbat, as if the Shabbat was a person that's coming to see you. I just closed it. I think Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yanai. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Chanina? And Rabbi Yanai, right? And Rabbi Yanai, right? That they would each get dressed and actually go outside to greet the Shabbat. Bo v'neitzei, let's go out. Likrat Shabbat HaMalkah. And Rabbi Yanai would say, Bo ichala. Well over 1,000 years later in Tzfat, this minhag took on an even greater significance, right? You all know how Kabbalah Shabbat started in Tzfat. And the Arizal used to take his Talmidim, right? If you go to Tzfat today, there's two Arizal shuls, right? There's two Ari shuls in Tzfat. Why is there one's Ashkenazi and one's Sephardi? Why does he have two shuls, right? And was he both Ashkenazi and Sephardi? What's going on here? What really happens is the Sephardi, what's called the Sephardic Ari shul, which is down in the bottom near the cemetery, that's where the Arizal actually had his Beit Knesset. What's called the Beit Knesset Ari Ashkenazi, that's further up the mountain. That spot, there was no Beit Knesset in the time of the Arizal, the buildings are newer there. That spot, at the time of the Arizal, the city was small. The city of Sfat started down where the cemetery is, and as time went on, it grew up the mountain. Right? That spot where the Ariz Ashkenazi shul is today, what they call the Chakal Tapuchin Kadishin, which is a Kabbalistic term, that spot was outside the city. That's the field, that was the field where they used to go for Kabbalat Shabbat. Right? So Bo v'nei tzei likrat Shabbat HaMalkah, they would actually do it. They would actually leave the city, go up to the hills, right? And they would turn to face the minhag in Kabbalat Shabbat. I don't know why I'm telling you this now. I should wait till this when we learn the Chadodi. But anyway, the minhag of that we turn around at the end, Bo ichala, right? That's the last phrase, or Bo ichala Shabbat Malketa. There's two versions of it. That's the last phrase in the Chadodi, right? They did it, we turn around. Right? Everyone turns around to the back of the shul, right? The real minhag is not, you're supposed to turn around to the back of the shul. The real minhag is you're supposed to turn around and pini. Okay. So they would actually go out of the city and they would turn around facing the west when they would say Bo ichala. Why facing the west? First of all, in Tzfat, the geography is such they turn around and face the mountains, which are in the back, the Harei Meron there. But what's happening in the west on Friday afternoon? The sun is setting. And therefore, that's where you see the Shabbat coming in from, so to speak. Right? So they were trying to face the west. Right? Most communities, at least in Europe, you face east when you daven. So when they said Bo ichala, they turned around to west, which was in the back of the shul. Right? But now, so for example, where I live, we daven facing north. So you shouldn't really be facing in the back of the shul, you're facing south. You just turn to the west. So there are, if you watch this, you'll see some people know what they're doing. They face the west, and the people face the back. But that's the idea, right? That minhag of the Arizal, and also the idea of saying the six prakim of Tehillim, that they say there, and then Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, and the piyut of L'Chadodi, which was written by Rabbi Shlomo Alkabetz, all of this, we're kind of expanding on the minhag, which is really a halacha. The Rambam quotes it, the halacha, that you see here, that you're supposed to prepare for Shabbat, and in a sense, greet the coming of the Shabbat. So that here is the first halacha that's referenced in this piyut here. B'chein narutz likratech, Bo ichala nesucha. And not only that, the idea of narutz likratech is also based on halacha. The Gemara Masechet Bava Kama discusses the following. Bava Kama daf lamed bet amud bet. Let's say, Masechet Bava Kama, as you probably know, discusses nezikin, it discusses damages, right? If one person damages another person's property, or even someone damages someone's person, right? If I injure someone, I have to pay the damages, right? So Gemara discusses the case, what if two people are in the street, and they're walking or running through the street, and they crash into each other, right? And they damage each other, right? People get hurt. You know, who's responsible to pay, right? Yeah, you know, you bumped into me, watch where you're going, you watch where you're going, they go to court, you know, I have a broken arm now, he should pay the doctor bills, I can't, you know, they're suing each other, right? What's the halacha? So the Gemara there says, that if they're both walking, then they're both patur. If they're both running, they're both patur. If one's walking and one's running, it's a machloket. Maybe the one who's running is obviously, you know, maybe you shouldn't be running in the street, and this is like, you know, negligence. So if you smash into somebody, he was walking calmly, you went running down the street, there was an accident, so maybe the one who's running. That's a machloket in the Gemara there. One opinion says, no, they're still both patur. The other one says, no, the one who was running is chayav. He has to pay the damage on the other guy. But Not if it's Friday afternoon or right before Shabbat. If he's running right before Shabbat, then he's running a Tzorach Mitzvah, and even that opinion agrees that he doesn't have to pay. V'chein narutz likrateich, boi, it's a Gemara in Bava Kamma. V'chein narutz likrateich, boi kala misucha. Levush bigdei chamudot. So here we need to see some psukim and also a Gemara. And you'll see the Gemara is referenced a few times throughout the Zemar. The psukim are in Sefer Yeshayahu, very famous psukim, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with. Yeshayahu, Perek Nunchet. Psukim Yud Gimel V'Yud Aleph. Im Tashiv Mishabbat Raglecha, Asot Chafatzecha B'Yom Kodshi, V'Karata L'Shabbat Oneg, לקדוש השם מכובד וכיבדתו מעצות דרכך ממצוא חפצך ודבר דבר אז תתענג על השם וירכבתיך אבמות הארץ והאכלתיך נחלת יעקב אביך כי פי השם דבר אם תשיב משבת רגלך if on Shabbat you hold back your feet Asot chafatzecha miyom kodshi, and you refrain from doing your chafatzim, doing your business, doing your activities on my holy day. The karata the Shabbat oneg, and you will call the Shabbat pleasant, pleasurable. Likdosh Hashem et mechubad, you will call God's holy day honorable. V'chibadeto, and you will honor it. Me'asot dirachecha, from going along your ways. Mimtzo cheftzecha, from doing your business. V'daber davar, and speaking about things. If you'll do all that, then az titanag al Hashem v'rkavticha abamot v'yaretz. V'achalticha nachalat Yaakov avicha. You will remember that phrase also, because we're going to see it referenced in a moment. V'achalticha, I will feed you nachalat Yaakov avicha. I'll feed you the inheritance of Yaakov, your father, ki pi Hashem diber. Now, those are the psukim in Yeshayahu. Those psukim are extremely important halachically. There are two mitzvot that come from these psukim, two major mitzvot on Shabbat, which are, of course, what? Kavod ve'onek Shabbat. Those mitzvot derive from these psukim. They're mitzvot midrabanan, or mitzvot midivrei Kabbalah, actually. Biblical non-Torah mitzvot, biblical in the sense that they come from the Navi, right? So the mitzvot midivrei Kabbalah, and if you pull into Chol Shabbat, there's a lot of mitzvot that are based on that, which most of them are referenced in this piyut here. But before we go through the piyut and see all the references, we have to take a quick look at a Gemara. So again, I apologize for not photocopying. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbat of Kuf Yud Gimel discusses this Gemara. And it learns certain things from the way the psukim are the way the psukim are mentioned here. Again, if you have the pasuk, I'll just read it one more time. Im tashiv mishabat raglecha, asot chafatzecha biyom kodshi, v'karata v'shabat oned, l'kdosh Hashem mechubad, v'chibadito me'asot derachecha, mimtso chefzecha, v'daber dana. On that basis, the Gemara says the following thing. What does that mean? How do you fulfill it? You have to honor the Shabbat from or instead of doing your chafatzim. V'chibadeto, says the Gemara, shelo yehe malbushcha shel Shabbat ki malbushcha shel chol. Your clothing on Shabbat should be different than the clothing that you wear on chol. Where do you get that from the Chibadito? The Gemara explains. The Chihadu Rabbi Yochanan called it Mame Mechabdotai. Rabbi Yochanan would refer to his clothing as his Mechabdotai. What do they say? The clothes make the man, right? Clothing, why do we wear clothing in addition to simply protecting ourselves from the elements? We wear clothing out of, but we should have dignity, right? And our clothing, therefore, honor us. So Rabbi Yochanan used to refer to his clothing as Mechabdotai, And therefore the Gemara says, when the Pasuk says v'chiba d'tzal, that's referring to clothing. So the first halacha that the Gemara learns from that Pasuk is that you should wear different clothing on Shabbat than you wear during the week. Shalei yehe mabushcha shel Shabbat kemabushcha shel chol. Me'asot d'rachecha. What does it mean? What does it mean going about your paths, your drachim? Shalei yehe hiluchach shel Shabbat kiluchach shel chol. You're not supposed to walk on Shabbat the way you walk on the chol. You're not supposed to run on Shabbat. The Gemara Baba Kama was talking about running on Erev Shabbat, running to greet the Shabbat. But once Shabbat begins, you're not supposed to run. There's the whole discussion halacha. Are you allowed to run if you're late to shul? If you're allowed to run if you're going to a shir? Maybe young children or teenagers are allowed to run, right? Because they enjoy running, and for them, you know, it would be a tzar not to run. But basically, there's a notion that you walk on Shabbat different than the week we're rushing, we're running to do things on Shabbat. You're supposed to walk benacha. So, shelo yehi hiluchach shel Shabbat hiluchach shel kol. Mimtso chetzecha. You're not supposed to do your business. What's mimtso chetzecha? The Gemara says, chetzecha asurim, but chetzei shamayim mutarim. Later on we'll see what that means in practice. You're not allowed to do your business, mimtso chetzecha, chetzecha asurim, chetzei shamayim, but God's business, that you're allowed to do. We'll see what that means. And finally, the daber davar. You're not allowed to speak about things on Shabbat. Shelo yehi diburach shel Shabbat, ki diburach shel chol. You're not allowed to speak on Shabbat about the same things you speak about on chol. Rashi explains what that means. Kigon mekach u'memkar b'cheshbonot. You're not supposed to talk about business on Shabbat. You're not supposed to, you know, conduct negotiations or discuss money on Shabbat. And also, it says the daber davar. Speaking is just prohibited. Dibur asur, hirhur mutar. So it's prohibited. The Navi specifically spoke about dibur, v'daber davar. The Navi didn't say you're not allowed to think about these things in Shabbat. He said you're not supposed to speak about them. So dibur asur, hirhur mutar. You're allowed to think about your business on Shabbat. Doesn't mean it's a great mitzvah to do so, but there's no prohibition. If a person is sitting and just thinking about it, you know, I have to take care of this next week, I have to buy that, I have to remember how much it costs, whatever. As long as you don't speak about it, you're not violating Nisr. But if you speak about it, v'daber davar, so that's not allowed. Okay. That's the Gemara. Again, just quickly so we remember it. What did the Gemara tell us? V'chiba ritzo is mabush, shlo yehi mabushcha shel Shabbat ki mabushcha shel kol. And then, asot v'achecha shlo yehi hilucha shel Shabbat ki hilucha shel kol. Mimtso chetzecha, chetzecha asurin, chetzei shamayim mutarim. And v'daber davar shlo yehi diburach shel Shabbat ki diburach shel chol, dibur asur, hirhur mutar. Okay. That's the piyut. Levush bigdei chamudot. We have to wear very nice clothes. Lahadlik ner divracha. That's also a mitzvah. And a mitzvah of ner Shabbat, by the way. Where does the mitzvah of ner Shabbat come from? What? Right. So the rabbis instituted a mitzvah to light, a special mitzvah to light ner Shabbat. We make a bracha when we light it, as the Paitan indicates. Lahadlik ner divracha. But the Rishonim determined that mitzvah of Ner Shabbat is actually based on either Kavod Shabbat or Oneg Shabbat or both. It's Machloket Rashi and Tosfot. Remember this, Ruthie? Haven't we just learned this a few months ago? Right? It's either Kavod Shabbat or Oneg Shabbat or both. Rashi, Tosfot, the Rambam. But in any case, lighting the Ner Shabbat is based indirectly, at least on the same sukkim, so the Paitan throws it in here as well. Vateichel kol ha'avodot, that a remnant to a pasuk or something? Vateichel kol ha'avodot, vayichal alukim b'yom ha'shvii. Right? Hashem finished his work before Shabbat, so we also, vateichel kol ha'avodot lo tasum lecha. Lehit aneg v'ta'anugim. Oneg, that's the pasuk, right? B'karata l'shabbat oneg. What does it mean, oneg? Barburim u'shlav v'dagim. Gotta eat goose and pigeons or something, or swans, I don't know, birds. Gotta eat birds. Duck? You can? Chicken? I don't know. And fish. Okay, good foods. L'taneg v'tanugim, eat good food. Next stanza. Me'erev mazminim kol minei matamim. Mibodyom muchanim. Ah, here's the chickens. Tarnagolim mefutamim. So you can have your duck for the barburim in slav, and we'll have chicken for the tarnagolim mefutamim. What? Why doesn't it mention basar? It doesn't mention basar. It mentions bird. Interesting. I don't know. Other piyutim mention basar, right? In Yom Zimichubad, for example, mentions basar v'dagim. But hold on a second. I'm sorry. Okay. I don't know. I don't know why it doesn't mention basar. If we knew where and when it was written, maybe there's some historical tidbit. I don't know. Maybe. I have no idea. There's definitely an emphasis on birds here. Barburim and slag and tarnagolim. And fish. No meat. Low there. What may erev mazminim? Komine matamim. Mib odyom muchanim. The term muchan. Mean anything to you in Hilchot Shabbat? Yeah, prepare. But the term muchan specifically? Griffy? She'd get nailed because she was in my class this year. Muktze, right. Muchan is the opposite of muktze. Right? All the laws of muktze are based on the idea that when is muktze determined? At what point in time? Ben Hashmashot. Migo di it katsa'i leben Hashmashot. If something is muktze ben Hashmashot, it katsa'i lekula yom. It remains muktze the whole Shabbat. The idea before Shabbat is that everything that we have on Shabbat has to be prepared before Shabbat. That even, by the way, was also found in a pasuk earlier. Even before Matan Torah, when the Jews got the man, in Parashat Bishalach, they were told the following. Shmot Perek Tezayin. Moshe was told there's going to be twice as much man on Friday, and in fact that's what happened. And the people were confused. And they took, or the people were confused. People took twice as much. And, the Nesi'im came to Moshe and they said, you know, the people took twice as much man as they were supposed to take every other day. And Moshe explained to them, Hu asher diber Hashem, the people are correct. They're supposed to take twice as much man on Friday. Shabbaton, Shabbat Kodesh, Lashem, Machar. Et asher tofu, that which you're going to bake, Eifu, bake it, now. Et asher tivashlu bashelu, that which you're going to cook, cook it now. Et kol ha'odeh, everything else leave until the morning. Right? So that is the idea that the food is supposed to be prepared before Shabbat, and therefore the laws of Muktzeh, which are laws midrabanan that were instituted, are based on this idea that everything has to be prepared before Shabbat. If you have an object that before Shabbat is worthless, it's useless for it can't be used for anything, it's Muktzeh, so then it's not Mukhan, and therefore you cannot use it on Shabbat as well. If an egg is laid on Shabbat or on Yom Tov, you cannot eat that egg on that Shabbat or Yom Tov because at the beginning of Shabbat it wasn't there. Right? So, mi be'od yom muchanim tarnagolim mefutamim. You have to have everything prepared before Shabbat. Yes? No, it can be Friday, but it means beforehand. Beforehand. So, an integral part of Shabbat is preparing before Shabbat. Me'erev mazminim kol minei matamim, mibodyom muchanim tanigolim mefutamim, v'la'aroch bo kama minim shitot yenot mevusamim, v'tafnukei ma'adanim b'chol shalosh pe'amim. And here, of course, we have another halacha, which is also based on Shabbat, that you have to have shalosh sudot. There's a halacha that says you have to eat three meals on Shabbat. And that, pasuk, by the way, the Gemara learns, remember this one, Ruthie? Where the Gemara learns you have to have three meals? It was Machloket, where you have to have three meals or four, yes, from Hayom. From this pasuk that I just read from the man. Moshe said, right after what I read. So they left the man over to the next day. And then in pasuk Chafei, Vayomer Moshe, Ichluhu Hayom, Ki Shabbat Hayom Lashem, Hayom Lo Timtza'u Basadeh. So the Gemara says, since the word Hayom appears three times in that pasuk, we should need three meals on Shabbat. At least according to the opinion that's accepted la halacha. So there's a chiyuv to have three meals on Shabbat, and that halacha was also inserted into the piyut here. For la'aroch kama minim shtot yenem v'usamim v'tafnukei ma'adanim b'chol shalosh pe'amim. Yes. Tafnukei ma'adanim. Ma'adanim are things which are adin, they're delicate, they're delicacies. And pinuk is, right, to, well, sometimes if you use it in a negative sense, in modern Hebrew, you call someone mifunak, mifuneket. That's not a nice term, right? It means you're overly, it means you're spoiled, it means you're. But lefunak means lefanek means to treat someone well, or to what's the right word for it? To I guess so. Okay. So v'tafnuke pamper is a good word. That's a more neutral term, right? V'tafnuke ma'adanim. So on Shabbat we're supposed to pamper ourselves with delicacies. B'chol shalosh pim. Nachalat Yaakov Yirash Bili Mitzarim Nachala. Nachalat Yaakov Yirash comes from where? From those Pesukim in Yishayahu. What did Yishayahu say? If you do all those things, V'chibadito Me'asot Rechecha Mintochet Zecha V'daber Davar Az Tit'anag Al Hashem, you'll have the oneg, the spiritual oneg of Hashem, V'ha'achalticha Nachalat Yaakov Avicha. So here, the Paitan draws on that pasuk. Nachalat Yaakov Yirash, Beli Mitzarim Nachala, V'yichabduhu Ashir Varash, V'tizku L'Giula. First of all, V'yichabduhu Ashir Varash, this is also halacha. Halacha, the Shofar Aruch quotes, in Siman Tuf Ayin. Bet. Rabbi Akiva told us halacha. Very, very difficult halacha. If a person, God forbid, is very, very, very poor and cannot afford pretty much anything. So Rabbi Akiva said, "Atei shabatcha chol ve'al titzarech labriot." If you're going to need to take tzedakah from another person in order to keep the mitzvot of kavod and oneg Shabbat, better not to. Rather, atzei Shabbat chachol, he didn't mean to do malacha, of course. But even if you won't be able to show the proper honor to Shabbat, even in a little way, so atzei Shabbat chachol, thou tzitzareich labriot. Better to make Shabbat like a weekday and not to require the assistance of other human beings. However, that's a Gemara. We keep recording the Gemara Masechet Shabbat. However, once we get to the halacha lemaaseh, that halacha, although it remains on the books as an important halachic principle, that halacha, in practical terms, is almost never relevant. Why? Because the Shulchan Aruch says, first of all, afilu mi shetzarich la'acherim, even a person who requires the help of other people, a person who is living on tzedakah, even he in Yeshlo Me'at Mishalo, Tzarich Lezarez Atzmo Lechabed Et HaShabbat. V'lo Amru Asei Shabbat Chachol V'al Tzarech Labriot El Al Mishe HaShaad V'chukado Biyoter. So in other words,
you want to just maybe close the door so we can...
The way that the Acharonim explain this, the halacha is the following. If a person is very poor, barely has enough to subsist on, is managing to get by without tzedakah, but is living very, very poor, and that person has very limited resources, but the person could afford something, like Mara says, katsa daharsana, like some kind of a very inexpensive but slightly nicer dish than they used to eat during the week. If you can afford a little cake or a little fish or a little fruit for Shabbat, then that's the obligation, right? They used to sing in Europe. There was this Yiddish folk song. It was lamenting the poverty that they used to live in. The song was about how they had nothing to eat but potatoes, bulmus in Yiddish. The song goes how they ate zuntik bulmus and muntik bulmus, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all they eat is bulmus. Shabbos, potato kugel. Right? That was the song. Right? But that's a way to fulfill the halacha. Mitzad sheni, a person who's more poor than that, a person who unfortunately does not have enough money to get by and is living on tzedakah anyway, So that person, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Afilu misha tzarich la'acherim." If you're already taking tzedakah, so then the person has to take a little bit more tzedakah in order to have nicer food for Shabbat. So who was Rabbi Akiva talking about when he said, "Asei Shabbat chachol ve'alte tzarich la'briot"? If a person is mamash on the borderline, the person is barely getting by, barely making ends meet, with no leeway, hasn't had to go and ask for tzedakah yet. But if that person, but the person has no money left for anything special on Shabbat, not even a little extra food, not even potato kugel, nothing special. And the only way that person could do that would be to kind of get pushed over the line and have to depend on tzedakah. In such a case, we say, better, asei Shabbat chachol, v'al tzedarech labriot. But if the person either is able to do something small in honor of Shabbat on the person's own, or alternatively, if the person is already on tzedakah anyway, and this is not going to make the difference between being self-sufficient and being dependent on charity, so then you're supposed to, in either of those two cases, which, if you think about it, is virtually every case. You know, it's very difficult to imagine. Rabbi Akiva's din becomes more of a conceptual principle than a practical one. Right? It's very difficult to imagine a situation where you have a person who, on the one hand, is able to exist without taking tzedakah, and yet doesn't have even the slightest leeway for even the smallest, most symbolic something nicer for Shabbat, even if it means, and the Shulchan Aruch says, it means you have to go hungry a little bit during the week. A little bit, right? Just to have a little bit something nicer for Shabbat, so that's the obligation. Therefore, in all practical terms, we return to the piyut again, v'ichabduhu ashir varash. The wealthy person has to show honor to Shabbat in his way, and the destitute, indigent person also has to show honor to Shabbat. And here we have a reference to the idea that we noticed the last time we spoke about Dror Yikra. We spoke about the connection between Shabbat and Geulah, right? Just one Shabbos and I'll all be free, right? We spoke about how Shabbat seems to be directly connected to Geulah. Here you have it hinted in this piyut also. Yichabdu Ashir Varash v'tizku l'Geulah Yom Shabbat im tishmoru. If they keep Shabbat, they will be zochet to the Geula. V'yitem li segula, sheshetemim ta'avodu, v'ashvi'i nagila. Next stanza. Chafatzecha atzurim, that's of course a quote from those psukim in Yishayahu that we saw. V'gam lachashov cheshbonot, hirhurim mutarim, u'lishadeh chavanot. That's the one everyone likes to scream out loud. Now you're going to learn what it really means, right? Right? We had a whole joke this year in MMY about Hirhurim Mutarim, right? Hirhurim Mutarim L'Shadei Chavanot. You can imagine what people did with that. We won't discuss who was responsible for that joke. We'll just leave that all behind. But in any case, what does it really mean? You now know exactly what it means. You read the Gemara. Dibur Asur, it's teaching you Hilchot Shabbat. Dibur Asur, Hirhur Mutar. That's what the Gemara said. So, chafatzecha asurim v'gam lachashov cheshbonot, you are not allowed to do business or even to discuss business and make calculations to sit down and, you know, figure out how much money the guy owes you and that kind of stuff. Hirhurim mutarim, you're allowed to think about those things. Now, what's ulishadei chabanot? What's that doing there? It's actually ulishadei chabanot v'tinok lelamdo sefer lamnatzeach ben ginot. It all goes together. What are those things all doing there? That's based on yet another Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. This one on Daf Kuf Nun Amud Aleph. The Gemara explains. The Gemara explains in Masechet Shabbat that Kuf Nun Amud Aleph. Amar Kra. Mimtso cheftzecha v'daber davar cheftzecha atzurim cheftzei shamayim mutarim. Okay, this is what we discussed in the other Gemara in Kufshu Gimel. It's quoted here also. So how do you get that? Oh, I'm sorry. It's actually a little bit earlier. The Gemara says, Tanav Devei Menashe mishadchin al tinokot le'areis b'shabbat ve'al tinok le'lamdo sefer u'le'lamdo umenot. You're allowed to arrange a shidduch on Shabbat. The shadeich ha'tinokot, let's say there's a girl who needs to get married, particularly someone in the Farshim understand this is referring specifically to, let's say, an orphan who doesn't have parents, and it's the community's responsibility to take care of her. And let's say you want to arrange for someone to marry her. And sometimes, especially in the old days, perhaps less the case now, maybe not, I don't know, but sometimes, you know, arranging a marriage involves also almost a business negotiation, who's going to pay how much money and this and that. And at least it used to be, maybe still is in some cases, that the actual marriage will depend on the successful conclusion of those negotiations. That type of discussion you're allowed to have on Shabbat. You're allowed to discuss a marriage, even if it involves things in whom you aren't discussed on Shabbat. You could also hire a person to teach Torah to a child, right? You could interview and hire a teacher on Shabbat. That Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't discuss the nitty-gritty details of the salary, how much, you know, salary terms and benefits, but you can hire a person on Shabbat. You could say, I'd like you to teach my child, or I have a job open, I have a position open in our yeshiva, we'd like to offer you a job as a teacher. You're not supposed to offer people jobs on Shabbat normally. That's permissible. And not just to teach what we call Limudei Kodesh, but in our terms even to teach what we call Limudei Chol, Lelamda Umanot, even to teach a trade. Maybe not all Limudei Chol, maybe not the theoretical ones, but certainly to teach practical matters, you can hire a teacher to teach a trade on Shabbat, to teach a profession. Why? All these things are tzarech mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to get married or to help a child or certainly an orphan to get married. It's a mitzvah to teach a child Torah, and it's a mitzvah to teach a child trade. Why is it a mitzvah to teach him a trade? Rashi explains, Ha nami mitzvah hi, to kol she'enu melamdo umenot, melamdo listut. If you don't teach your child how to earn an honest living, what are you essentially teaching him indirectly? You're going to teach him how to earn a dishonest living, right? Because that's what he's going to have to do. So, and you can teach him basically, if you don't teach him how to earn an honest living, you're teaching him how to rob and cheat and steal, right? So, you're allowed to, on Shabbat, even though you're normally not allowed to discuss financial or business matters, you're allowed to deal with shidduchim, you're allowed to deal with teaching Torah, and you're allowed to teach also a trade. Just one second, Michal.
Hirhurim mutarim, ulishadech habanot, v'tinok lelamdo sefer, and laminatzeach binginot. And you could teach him, for example, how to be a musician. Not you can't play music on Shabbat, but you could arrange music lessons for your Shabbat, for your child on Shabbat, if that would be a professional sort of thing that he would be able to earn a living with. And why did the Paitan choose that of all the different trades that you might teach? You could also teach him to be a carpenter. Why a musician? Because that allows the Paitan to weave in the next halacha that you're supposed to sing Zmirot on Shabbat. Lam natzeach bin ginot pel hagot bin rei shefer, which I'll get to in a moment. Okay, but just to round out this piece, so, all the jokes aside, here, hurim mutarim ulushadei chabanot v'tinok lelamdo sefer, a certain rav that I know, who's at this point a distinguished rav in his 60s, whose name might be familiar to some of you, and I will therefore not mention it, but he told me that when he was much, much younger, when he was maybe in his 30s or so, he had a sister who unfortunately did not get married until she was a little bit older. And maybe she was even in her 40s, but she was still single. Eventually she did get married. But he said that they used to sit around, and he was already married. His father was a rav, and he was a younger rav. He used to sit around at his parents' table when they would get together, and his adult sister was there. He used to point to her whenever they said "Lishadei Chabanot," you know, kind of, you know, jabbing at her a little bit. But she didn't take the sit down. He said she used to point back at him when they said the "Tinok Lelamdo Sefer." So that's how he said he learned his lesson. But anyway, all the jokes aside, right? This is teaching us yet another halacha. Cheftzucha asurin cheftzei shamayim mutarim. So cheftzucha asurin begam machshov cheshbonot. Hirhurim mutarim. You can think even about your business, and you can actually speak about the Shadei Chabanot, Tinok Lelamdo Sefer, and Lamatzeach Ben Ginot as an example of a trade. Yes, Michal.
Can they teach not on trade?
Can you actually have lessons in something that doesn't, if it doesn't involve doing a malacha or anything of that nature, could you teach the child? Could you give him a lesson on how to do accounting or something like that on Shabbat? Well, for the child it would be asur, because it's not chasei shamayim for him, right? For the teacher who, or for the father or the Beit Din that has to take care of this orphan that needs to help and arrange for these lessons to take place, that's permissible because it's the tzarich mitzvah. For the kid himself, right? Otherwise we'd all be allowed to do business on Shabbat, right? So I think it's more arranging for these lessons to take place rather than actually giving the lessons. I guess if it was necessary in a certain case, perhaps you could. But in any case, that's what the Paitan is driving at here. Now, Lamaseach bin Ginot, V'lahagot b'imrei shefer b'chol pinot u'machanot. That's also based on a Gemara. The Gemara tells us, it's already mentioned, or at least hinted at in the Gemara Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud-Bet Amud Bet, in a Gadic context, having to do with Haman and Achashverosh. But there's a reference that the Jews used to have a practice back then of talking Divrei Torah on Shabbat and singing songs. The notion of singing Zmirot on Shabbat is found in that Gemara. And I saw this on the internet actually. I did a web search to see if anyone had anything to say about it. And I saw a quote from the Sefer Chassidim, which I wasn't able to look up because I don't have the Sefer Chassidim at home. Sefer Chassidim is a medieval work from Tami Rishonim, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. But they quoted from Sefer Chassidim that it's actually a mitzvah to sing Zmirot on Shabbat based on a pasuk in Tehillim, Mizmor Shir, Liyom HaShabbat, Tov Laudot Lashem, Ulizamer Lishimcha Elyon. So the idea of singing Zmirot maybe may go back to that Perek in Tehillim. It goes back to the idea, the Gemara Megillah, that says we should tell Divrei Torah and sing Zmirot on Shabbat. It's not just something fun we do to pass the time. It's part of the atmosphere of Shabbat. And that's also hinted at here. Lamnatzeach bin Ginot ve lahagot b'imrei shefer b'chol pinot u'machanot, to speak words of beauty, words of Torah. Next, Hiluchach tehei b'nachat. That was also based on that Gemara in Kuf Yud Gimel. You have to walk calmly on Shabbat. Oneg kira la Shabbat. Call Shabbat oneg. That's based on the pasuk we saw. B'karat la Shabbat oneg. The term the crow is based on the pasuk there. V'hashena meshubachat. We're told also in the Rishonim that sleeping on Shabbat is also a form of oneg. Right? Some Sfarim even quote the idea that the word Shabbat itself can be seen as an abbreviation for Shena b'Shabbat ta'anug. The idea that sleeping on Shabbat is a form of Oneg Shabbat. So we have that here also. V'hashena mishubachat. That's another one people like to scream out in response to Meshadei Chabanos. Everyone has a good time with this one. But it's real halacha here. This is halacha. Oh, that's why you scream it? Other people scream it because they want to go to sleep. But kedat nefesh mishibat. B'chein nafshi lecha orga. Where does that expression come from? Nafshi orga. Also from Tehillim. Which where? No? Oh, you know Tehillim by heart? I'm impressed. No, but it's the parak that it's the other parak we discussed in Sama Nafshi. It's, where is it? Membet. Ka'ayal ta'arog alafike mayim, kein nafshi ta'arog lecha elokim. And the next pasuk there is Sama Nafshi Lelokim Lekelchai, Mataya Vodeilu Epnei Elokim. That expression, B'chein Nafshi Lecha Arga, is a direct reference to that pasuk. V'lanuach B'chivat, Kashoshanim Suga, Bo Yanuchu, Bein Uvat. And we see that expression, Bein Uvat, which we also saw. See, I told you a few parallels. We saw that also in Dvar Yikra. The Bein Uvat, Ata Uvimcha Uvi Techa. Finally, I'm just rushing this a little bit because I want to also do one quick other piyut that I didn't do last time. I want to do Kari Bone very quickly because I don't have all that much to say about it. But I want to do it, so I'm rushing this a little bit. Me'ein olam haba yom Shabbat minucha. What is me'ein olam haba? The Gemara tells us, it's a Gemara, this one is in Brachot Daf Nun Zayin, Shabbat echad mishishim mitanug ha'olam haba. Shabbat is 1/60th of the pleasure of olam haba. What's 1/60th? I once heard an interesting... The term Echad Mishishim you find a lot in Chazal. Sleeping is 1/60th of death. All these sorts of things. The term 1/60th, I once heard a very interesting explanation. A lot of Agaritas use that expression. In Halacha, if something... for example, what's Halacha? If a drop of milk falls into your pot of meat, what's Halacha? It's Batil B'Shishim, right? If it's 60 times as much, it's Batil B'Shishim. So Echad B'Shishim is the smallest amount that's not Batil. Right? It's a tiny bit, but it's still less than Echad B'Shishim is God. Echad B'Shishim is the tiniest little bit that's still meaningful. Right? That's what I heard once. So
So, Shabbat echad b'shishi mitanuga olam haba. Somehow Shabbat is a tiny taste of what olam haba is. I don't know exactly how to understand that. But that's what is being said here. Me'ein olam haba yom Shabbat menucha. Kol mitangim ba yizku lerov simcha. Mechevlei Mashiach yutzalu lirvacha. Pedutenu tatzmiach v'nas yagon v'anacha. Yagon v'anacha, sigh and sorrow will run away. Chevlei Mashiach, the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin, that Tzadichet explains, at least according to some opinions or according to certain possible scenarios, it's not clear whether it has to be this way, but definitely one strand of thinking about the Yemot Mashiach and the ultimate Geulah is that although the final Geulah is a time of Simcha and Shalom and Shalva and peace and harmony on earth, the period immediately preceding it might be a very, very, very difficult time. Ad kidei kach, that one of the Amoraim there says, I hope Mashiach comes, but I hope I'm not around to see it. Because the period beforehand is going to be very, very difficult. We have the Nevuot of Melchemet Gog u'Magog from Sefer Yechezkel. So this is called at times Chevlei Mashiach. The term Chavalim, meaning pangs or pain, refers to when a woman is giving birth, labor pains are called Chevlei Leda. So the image here, the Chevlei Leda, right, a woman is in pain, and of course in childbirth, the most intense pain is right before the baby's born. So I have this horrific, terrible pain, and immediately afterwards, a new birth, the height of Simcha, that's Chevlei Mashiach. It's a very disturbing thought that right before Mashiach we're going to have to go through this. And of course, whenever something terrible happens, people say, oh, maybe the Holocaust was Chevlei Mashiach, maybe World War II was Chevlei Mashiach, maybe this was Chevlei Mashiach. Right? But certainly, the notion of Chevlei Mashiach is a very, very difficult notion. Our poet here tells us something amazing. Not only Shabbat me'ein olam haba, not only does Shabbat allow you to experience, as it were, olam haba while you're still here on earth, but kol ha-mit'angim ba yizku l'rov simcha. Not only will it make you very happy to keep Shabbat, right? Again, perhaps a similar idea to what we saw in Dunash's poem about Dror Yikra, that it gives you a kind of sense of personal liberty and peace. But mechevlei Mashiach yutzalu lirvacha. The keeping Shabbat not only brings the Geulah, but those who keep Shabbat are spared from having to suffer these terrible events that precede the Mashiach. And he didn't make that up. That's also a Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbat of Kuf Yud Chad Amar Aleph, Kol HaMekayim Shalosh Su'udot B'Shabbat Nitzal Mechevlei Mashiach. Particularly the mitzvah Shalosh Su'udot, of proper Onik Shabbat, that mitzvah saves you from suffering in the terrible events that are going to precede the Geula. So Me'ein Olam Haba Yom Shabbat Menucha, Kol HaMitangim Ba Yizku L'Rov Simcha, Chevlei Mashiach yutzalu lirvacha, pedutenu tatzmiach, cause our salvation to blossom, v'nas yagon v'anacha, cause all sorrow to run away. So having a very, very, very different style of period than the other ones we saw, but this period, you can learn Hilchot Shabbat from it. All of the laws of the mitzvot of Kavod and Oneg, they're all in here. Even the technicalities here, Hurim Mutarim, Chepzei Shamayim Mutarim, they're all in here. If I have just a few minutes here, if you don't mind, I want to just quickly discuss the period of Karibon, which I'll hand out to you while I speak to you. Yes. The Gemara says, Kol Mekayim Shalosh Sudot, Nisa Mivina Mechevle Mashiach. The Paitan here doesn't specify that directly. Okay. Karibon Olam, Rabbi Yisrael Najara. How can we not address Rabbi Yisrael Najara? I have to tell you. Yes. Yes. Rabbi Yisrael Najara, and his name is spelled out there in the beginning of each stanza. Yes. There should be enough. They're being passed around there. Okay. What can I say? Girls who go to MMY learn to have a very special relationship with Rehov Najara. And it has earned it a kind of reputation as to the unique character of this particular street. Yes, I believe that's the term I've often heard, Sketchy Najara. Without Chas V'Chalila saying anything negative, learning a little bit about Rabbi Yisrael Najara, who I didn't know, I learned, in fact, even on our website, we even have a little article that Aaron Cooper wrote about Rabbi Yisrael Najara.
But in preparing this piyut, I just read up a little bit more about him. What can I say? The street has a good name. It was named well. Rabbi Najara was a very, very unusual, extremely colorful, maverick, one might even say controversial person. Just like the street, deep down, it's pure Kedusha, but very unconventional. What do I mean? Well, Rabbi Sol Najara was born in Tzfat in 1555, which means that he's in Tzfat at the time of the Arizal. He spent a lot of time in Tzfat. He also spent some time in Damascus, where his father was a dayan. They moved to Damascus. Later on, he came back to Tzfat. At the end of his life, he was in Aza. He was the rav of the Jewish community of Aza. He's buried in Aza, today's Gaza City. Rabbi Yisrael Najara's grave is still there. It's one of the number of important Jewish sites that are in Gaza City that the Arabs try to deny are there, because then, and some of them have been destroyed. I don't know what they've done to his grave now. I don't know if anybody knows. But there's an old shul there, that important archaeological site that a few years ago they basically destroyed because they didn't want anyone to think that there were ever Jews there. But that's where Rabbi Yisrael Najara is buried. So he was a poet, and he wrote the Shirim. He wrote poems his entire life. We spoke about Dunash ibn Abrat, who used Arabic styles in his poetry. Rabbi Najara went further. Not only did he use Arabic styles in his poetry, he actually was very friendly with Arab and Turkish poets, and he used to associate with them. He used to go to their gatherings, and he used to have, was per, on a personal basis, had close friends. He used to sit with them in their gatherings, and they would sing songs to one another, and they would recite poetry to one another. Rabbi Najara with the Arabs and the Turks. And this practice got him criticized. He was basically, the rabbis of Damascus basically, put out a document against him, may have even kind of forced him to leave the city. And Rav Chaim Vital, who's also got a street here right upstairs, Rav Chaim Vital, who was probably the closest student of the Arizal, had very, very, very harsh words for Rabbi Yisrael Najara. He called him a drunk. And he said basically that even though he does write very nice poetry, it's usher to talk to him, it's usher to recite his poems, because they're piv diber nivalot, which is a very harsh criticism. But on the other hand, apparently the Arizal himself, who knew Rabbi Najara, didn't agree. Arizal said that his shirim are accepted in Shemayim, and the Malachim sing the songs of Rabbi Yisrael Najara. So apparently Arizal said. So apparently there was machloket about how to accept this person. So you see what I mean? Rechov Najara, kishmo kenhu. Nachon? We all love Rechov Najara. We all know that there's a lot of Kedusha underneath the surface. Right? You have to look a little bit. Right? And some very holy people live on Rechov Najara. I've gotten to know some of them. Okay, so, this piyut. This piyut is written in Aramaic. Not only is it written in Aramaic, now what does Aramaic mean? What does the Aramaic language symbolize? It's the language of Galut, exactly. Aramaic, we know of course from the Gemara, but Aramaic is actually found in Tanakh. Which Sefarim of Tanakh are written in Aramaic?
Daniel.
Parts of Daniel, and also parts of Ezra Nehemiah. Daniel, though, is the basis for this. A lot of the phrases in this piyut come from Sefer Daniel. I noticed that when I was my son learned Sefer Daniel this year in school. So as I was breaking my head trying to help him with the Aramaic, I started to, all of a sudden I'd be reading these Aramaic, and it's not the same Aramaic we use in the Gemara. It's very difficult. I was reading this psukim, and all of a sudden I would hear something. Chevat brava ofe shmaya. Wait a second, I know that expression, right? Now I found an article on our piyut.org website, also by that same woman who wrote about Samanashi, who commented, interestingly enough, that the piyut draws on the imagery of Sefer, or the phraseology in Sefer Daniel. Interestingly, some of the expressions that are used in this piyut to refer to Hashem are used in Sefer Daniel to refer to Hashem, but other of the expressions are used there to refer to Nebuchadnezzar. And the poet here takes them and uses them to refer to Hashem. So she suggests that what he was trying to do is, he's writing in the language of Galut, he's writing a poem about the Galut, and he's trying to be mitakein the situation. Right? If you know anything about the philosophy of Kabbalah, it's all about tikkun olam, particularly the Kabbalah that was ran in Sfat at that time, in the time of the Arizal. It's all about tikkun. We do mitzvot, we're mitakein the olam, and that brings the geula.
So perhaps he's writing in the language of Galut, using the terminology from the Sefer of Galut. Right? Daniel's all about deep in Galut Bavel, and it used that terminology and turned down its head. Instead of worshipping Nebuchadnezzar, or serving, not worshipping, instead of having to serve Nebuchadnezzar, it's all turned towards the Shemayim. And the last stanza, which we'll see, refers to the Yemot HaMashiach, and that stanza, there's no longer any imagery from Daniel. It's still written in Aramaic, but it's already moved away from Sefer Daniel and straight towards Yerushalayim. So I'm just going to read it and translate it. Very, very beautiful poetry. Ka ribon alam ve'almaya antu malka melech malchaya. The Shem Yud and Hey is one of the Shems of Hashem. It's the one that expresses Hashem's power. Ribon alam ve'almaya, the king of all worlds, antu you are melech malchaya. Ovad givurteich v'timhaya shvar kadamach v'hachavaya. You do powerful your deeds. Ovad in Aramaic means actions. Your actions are strengthy and powerful. Shvar kadamach v'hachavaya. Therefore, praise is beautiful. It's beautiful to praise you. Shvachin atader safra v'ramsha. I shall arrange my praises morning and night. Lach elaka kadisha divra kol nasha. To you, holy God, who has created all that is alive, even kadishin uvnei anasha chevad bira v'ofei shmaya. Created all the humans and all the people and all the animals and all the birds. He's created them all. Rav ravin ovdech v'takifin. Your actions are powerful and strong. Machich rimaya. Those who are Rimaya, those who are Ram, those who are lofty and high and powerful and strong, you put them down. And those who are bent over, you raise them up. Okay, so the image here is very clear. Am Yisrael is presently downtrodden, and the oppressing nations are strengthy and powerful. But you, God, Rav Ravin Ovdech V'Takifin, you're the one who is really powerful, Machich Remaya, you're going to knock down the ones who are presently tall, V'Zakev Kefifin, and bring up the ones that are below. So here, in the first two stanzas, it's all pure praises of God. Here he begins to hint at where this is going, right? It's first two stanzas was pure praises, first two and a half, really, first praises of God. Now there's a shift and a focus on sort of pleading, a plea before God to change the situation of the Jewish people. Machich remaya v'zakev kefifin. He's only hinted at it. He'll get explicit in the next stanza. Lu yichye givar shnim alfin la ye'ol givurteich b'chush b'naya. Even if a person would live 1,000 years, it's impossible for that person to ever comprehend or calculate God's greatness. Elaka dilei yikar uruvuta. Prok yat anach mipum arivata. Prok, release. Yat anach. Anna in Aramaic, with an ayin, is sheep. Release your sheep mipum arivata, from the mouth of the lion. Who's the sheep and who's the lions? Obviously, the sheep is Am Yisrael, and the lions are all the nations that attack us and destroy us. Prok yat anach. Mipum arivata, and then he moves from the metaphor and says it directly. V'apek yat amech migo galuta amech divechart mikol umaya. Remove apek milashon lafuke, to remove, to exclude, take out lahotzi, take out your nation migo galuta, from inside the galut amech divechart mikol umaya, the nation that you've chosen from all other nations. L'mikdasheich tuv u'l'kodesh kudshin. Tuv in Aramaic is shuv, right? The tuf and the shin interchange. Return to your mikdash u'l'kodesh kudshin, to the kodesh kadashim. Atar divei yechedon ruchin v'nashim. The place where all of us, ruach v'nefesh, will rejoice. Milashon chedva. V'yizamrun lach shirin v'rachashim. We will sing new praises to you. Birushleim karta di shufraya. What's a karta di shufraya? Karta, the city. Shufraya, shefer, beauty. Ir hayofi.
the city of beauty. Who called Yerushalayim the city of beauty first? Also Tehillim. Yifeinof mesof kol haaretz, har tzion yaketei tzafon. Yizamun lach shirin v'rachashim v'yushleim karta di shufrayim. And here in this last stanza, therefore, the Aramaic, the language which was, again, filled with the allusions to Daniel, kind of breaks forth into a free-flowing, you know, image of this future time. The Mikdashech Tuv v'lekodesh kudshin v'yushleim karta di shufrayim.